It's time for the Mac Geek Gab, and listener Pensacola Craig brings us our quick tip of the week with, while many folks do not opt for Apple to engrave their newly purchased devices, even though it's free, because it may impact resale value down the line. I've been using a technique of branding the device specs in place of personalization. I find it helpful downstream when selling and remembering exactly what it is at a glance. For instance, he would put on the engraving, iPad Pro, 11-inch, 4th generation, M2, 256 gigabytes. More quick tips like this, plus your questions answered today on the Mac Geek Gab number 1027 for March 4th, 2024.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in all kinds of stuff to feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Quick tips, too, like Craig just did. Cool stuff found, like you'll hear later. Questions, which we try to provide answers to. Sometimes we bring questions of our own. Quick tips and cool stuff found as well. The goal being that each and every one of us learns at least 5 new things every single episode we get together. Sponsors for this episode include a couple of new ones. Parallels.com/MGG, where code MGG15 gets you 15% off. Backblaze.com/MGG, where you can go and get a fully featured, no-risk free trial. And LinkedIn.com/MGG, where you can go and post your first job for free. We'll talk more in depth about each one of those in a little while. For now, back here in Durham, New Hampshire, on International Dungeon Master or Game Master Day, March 4th, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen. I'm going to have to jump in on that D&D thing. I have not done that in a while.
Yeah, right? It's, you know, it's something.
And here from Pensacola, Florida, it's Pilot Pete. Are you the key master or the gatekeeper, Dave? I'm asking for a friend.
I don't know. I don't know what I am.
Oh, my God.
I'm back from Mexico. That's what I know. So,
right
yeah.
on.
There Yipper. Yipper.
Right. Hey, one more follow-up on that quick tip. Pensacola Craig wrote us back again and wrote to you. You answered it. It was hilarious. It was a great idea. Remember what I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah. When he got his Apple Pencil 2, he engraved it number 2 pencil.
Brilliant.
which is brilliant. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. We got to have fun with this stuff. But I like that. That I liked a lot. Yeah.
Pilot Pete had to bring up Keymaster. Look at this.
Oh, there you go. Adam's got his. Oh, yeah.
I got my new Trono wand this week, so I'm ready to bust some ghosts. Let's go.
Yeah. This is the reason you want to watch the YouTube, folks, is to be able to see that. That's right.
I saw him getting up and right away and going somewhere. I'm like, where's he going?
Yeah.
Hold that up.
I won't do it now, but it has full lights and sound. And...
Oh, yes. Awesome. We ain't afraid of no ghosts here. All right. Andrew will take us to our next quick tip. He says, I had forgotten that Hot Corners existed. It's in system settings, desktop and dock, Hot Corners in the far bottom right. And it makes getting what I want, getting to where I want quicker. And he's right. I'd forgotten about these too. It can be really handy for, I have used Hot Corners to keep a screen from going to sleep while I'm doing like recording or something. Or you can use it to, you know, do the quick note thing. You can have it put your screen to sleep. You can have it, you know, bring you to your desktop, all that good stuff. So Hot Corners. Thank you for the reminder because it's good stuff. Yeah.
I use it and get caught by it. So
right.
Be careful out there.
Yeah. That is fair. Yeah. There is like, I believe if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. You can, if you don't want to get caught by it, you can have a hot corner only activate if you hold down a modifier key, right?
Probably what I need to do. Yeah. That's good advice.
If you go into the hot corners settings, just like he said, system settings, desktop and dock, scroll all the way to the bottom, and then you'll see hot corners, .. And it will come up. And if you have multiple displays, your corners are not at the corners of your display. It's at the corners of your entire virtual desktop. So it gets a little weird. But if you, you can pick from the menu what you want it to do. And if you hold down a modifier key like Control, Shift, Option, or Command, you can choose to have that hot corner be, you know, command, require the command key to say, do the thing, whatever the thing is. So that is a good way to keep from getting caught. Yes. And it seems like you can disable screensaver. That's the one that I have used, in the past, but yeah. So yeah, thank you for that. Good stuff, Andrew. You rock. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com is where Andrew and Craig and I, most of the folks here have sent these in too. So Pete's muted, so he's trying to join in on the fun here, but he just can't. It's just not going to happen. Did I mute you, Pete? No, you're going to have to just do it. You're back. That's nice to have you.
I pressed the unmute button 3 times and it wouldn't play, but... I was saying, I think he wrote the feedback at MacGeekGab.com. That's where I think he was.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Pete, sometimes we use the Stream Deck to control our StreamYard thing, browser interface. And if you have your cursor in the chat window in there, any command sent from the Stream Deck will just appear as chat
things. Yes. Yeah. And that's where I was actually over on the over on the agenda.
Oh,
my mouse was over on the agenda instead of on the StreamYard window.
Got it. Wait, you don't have your StreamYard macros set to like bring Chrome to the front first?
I should.
I would agree with that. Yes. Yeah. I wish it could like go and do things to Chrome, even if it was in the background, right? That would be even better.
Well, and that's how it does it, by bringing Chrome to the foreground first.
Yes.
Then put it back.
then put it back.
You should just know what I want and do it, for goodness sakes.
That's the thing.
This is not hard, Apple.
Yeah. Read my mind.
Intel. Yeah, exactly. What's AI all about?
Well, not that. But, but you know.
That's what it's becoming.
Yeah,
it is.
Have
the computers do what we want, not what we tell them.
Yes. Yes, you're not wrong. Yeah. All right. Are we, you want to take us to Harvey?
Yeah. So Harvey says, here's this cool stuff found that I don't know if I've ever heard on your show. I've become a big fan of the slide to type on my iPhone. That's on the iPhone keyboard. You can slide to type. And wondered if it was possible on an iPad. There's no setting for it on the iPad. However, when the keyboard pops up for you to use, to type something in most apps, if you locate the keyboard symbol at the bottom right of the keyboard, press and hold it, a pop-up appears and lets you choose floating. That brings up a movable keyboard. Just drag that to the middle bottom of your screen, and then you can slide to type on that. So, that's the little, like, I want to use my iPad one-handed kind of trick, too, right? You know, where you can kind of more use it like an iPhone and... you can get it down in the corner, a smaller version of the keyboard. But yeah, then you can use the slide to type. So I think Apple feels like slide to type is really something that you just want to do on a smaller keyboard. And if you have a full keyboard, you should tap things out, I guess. But
yeah,
I get that. But I can't tell you how many times I've tried to slide to type on my iPad and go, oh yeah, can't do that here.
Do you use slide to type on your phone, Pete?
I do.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah, it's I'm so much faster. Slide to type. And I've got to say, I'm impressed with how intuitive it is most of the time. But for those who want to, of course, you shouldn't be reading your phone while driving anyway, but you will break a rib laughing. There's the damn you autocorrect is gone, and that was in a big legal fight and all that. But if you Google damn you autocorrect and find some of those, they are howl out loud funny. some of the mistakes have gone back and forth.
I think there's a Facebook group that I'm part of that just like where people post those, and occasionally I'll see one like, you know, come across while I'm doom scrolling or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, months later, I still laugh about some of them.
It's good. Oh.
Where I was surprised the slide type doesn't work is on the Vision Pro.
Oh.
I think it'd be really you would think there of all places. Because the air pecking is much more difficult. It'd be easier to just like wave your finger around and.
Huh.
Easier for you to do, harder for the program.
Yeah, maybe, and that might be why it doesn't work. It might be hard to track finger that. But, I mean, the tracking's on it. It's pretty good, so I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. That's, yeah. Yeah. Does it need the tapping motion to happen in order for it to know that you want to type and you're not just randomly moving your hand around?
Well, you'd only activate it when the keyboard was
up. Oh, that's fair. So like, Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not. It turns out I'm not the lead engineer on that project, Adam.
It was just a weird thing because I was like, everybody was talking about how a little bit awkward it was to air type. You can really only do the hunt and peck. You can't do like home row typing on it very well. And I was like, well, why doesn't they have the slide to type thing that, you know, is like the workaround for that?
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Pete, you want to take us to listener Peter's thing, and I will preface this by saying you did not know of either of our new sponsors before you prepped this one. So this is not a like,
right?
This is not a thing, but
this
it's a thing.
A good segue to the ads.
Yeah,
but, you know,
but it's really not. Yeah.
So listener Peter from Auburn, Maine writes in and says, great discussion on backups on the latest episode. I tend to be with Adam on the more obsessive side of backing up. I love Backblaze, and a feature that has saved me is being able to get large amounts of restore data on an encrypted USB drive. They charge $189 for this, but wait, there's more. But if the drive is returned within 30 days, they give a full refund, so it's effectively free. I got caught when I accidentally pointed Carbon Copy Cloner at the wrong external drive, ouch, and hosed several hundred gigabytes of data. I had everything back within 2 days and was refunded within a week. It was a good test of the ability to restore. That's my story, and I'm stuck with it. Actually, he says I'm sticking to it. So that's cool. Yeah, Backblaze. I didn't realize that was a semi-free service.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that they would want to be able to recoup their cost if you choose not to send it back to them, but. Yeah. Makes sense. I like it. It's good. I came back from Mexico, and the only Apple Watch that I brought with me was my Ultra 2. I still have my Series 5 that I use occasionally. Actually, I use for sleep most nights, but I use the Ultra 2 for everything while I was there and had it track my sleep. I would just put it on charge for like, you know, 30 minutes a day, and that was generally enough. And one thing that going into the trip I thought would be great, and then it turned out it was a little bit much, is the Depth app, right? The Apple Watch Ultra and Ultra 2 have the Depth app, which shows all kinds of things. It basically is a dive computer for your Apple Watch, and it shows the depth that your watch is. And also shows the water temperature. So that was kind of cool, you know, floating in the pool and being like, oh, what's the, you know, what's the temp? However, the way it is set by default, which is cool, is once the Apple Watch, as soon as the Apple Watch detects that it is submerged, it jumps into depth app mode, puts the screen at full brightness, because that's what you would want if you were using it that way, and shows you this data and updates it in real time. And that kind of thing, folks, burns your battery. Yeah. So I thought, well, this is like cool. And it was fine for the first day. And it was fun to see, oh, the pool's, you know, 88 degrees or something, 86 degrees, whatever it was. It's nice. It's fine. And but then I was like, okay, I got to turn this off. So I found a cool setting that I will call the casual swimming or the floating, or as we did in Mexico, the flinking setting, because we were floating and drinking. is really what was happening because there was a swim-up bar. So the flinking setting on the Apple Watch Ultra is go into settings on your watch, general, auto launch, and that'll be in the depth section, and it'll be threshold when submerged, and you can change it to at 3 feet. And this way, it won't kick in the moment the watch is submerged. It will only kick in when you go below 3 feet. So if you're just sort of flinking there and your watch is going in and out of the water as you are raising your cup, I highly recommend cup floaties and a straw if you really want to flink like a professional. But my watch just stayed in like chilled out mode and the battery lasted a whole lot longer. So
Dave, when you did put that up into the agenda, of course, I went into that in my watch to do that too. And I actually found another setting in there.
Okay.
And I was shocked to see background app refresh. It go into settings and right below that, you'll see background app refresh. Tons of apps are refreshing in the background. I went in, I turned off almost everything, some weather data, you know, location data, that kind of stuff I kept. But, I ride Korean Airlines once every 3 or 4 years, but, you know, so I turned that off. I mean, obviously if you don't call it up, it shouldn't be refreshing in the background, but I found several other apps that would be called up and I don't want those refreshing in the background and working on my battery at all, ever. So there's a bunch in there worth turning off, I think.
Maybe.
In my humble opinion.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, you're not wrong. Obviously, an app that's refreshing in the background will take up some amount of energy. Like, this is just a fact. However, Apple is really smart about the way it allows apps, third-party especially, and probably first party, although the first party apps likely get to break the rules, but third party apps for sure wind up getting coalesced background updates. It will wait until it knows that several apps need to do a thing or one app needs to do a thing at a very specific time. And then it will be like, all right, who else needs an update? Let's go. We're going to get online. We're going to do these updates. We're going to do the energy expensive things. Sure. And then we're going to be done. And we're going to turn off we're going to go back into lower power, power conservation mode, whatever, not low power mode. But I guess my question / caution would be test it. See what your watch is like for a day with everything on. See what your watch is like for a day with, all of these things off. Obviously, you're not going to use your watch exactly the same. There's no way that you're going to get, like, unless you, like, really lab test this thing. But otherwise, you're going to get a general sense of, did it make enough of a difference for me to bother to go and manage these things and potentially leave myself in a scenario where I go to launch the Korean Airlines app and now it needs to do some updates and I don't get the data I want right away. I don't know.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Adam, what do you have any?
I mean, I think it's an opt-in, opt-out thing in my mind, but I'm with you. Like, everything kind of opts in.
Yeah.
So I think Pete's advice is good. Like, at least go look and see what's like opted in. And this goes for notifications. This goes for, and you can use the background refresh thing on your iPads and your iPhones and stuff like that. But it's that balance, right? It's the balance of, if I turn this off, knowing that next time I go to launch that app, it's not just going to like fly up and have information for me ready to go. Or with a watch, it's even more, right? If you have a complication tied to it or something, you want that data immediately there. You don't want it to have to do a network call and depending upon where you are and all those other things. So you got to be, aware of what you're setting. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, folks. Well, you know how we're always diving deep into the tech vortex, right? Well, there's one abyss you never want to get caught in, the data loss black hole. That's where our sponsor Backblaze beams in like the superhero of the digital cosmos. Adam, Pete, and I have all used Backblaze to shield our Macs, And trust me, it's like having your own data guardian angel. For just $99 a year, you get unlimited cloud backup for Macs, PCs, even your entire business, making sure your digital life is secure and, more importantly, recoverable. Because let's face it, losing data is more terrifying than accidentally calling your high school crush while trying to delete their number. Deploying it? A breeze. And if disaster strikes, like a ransomware attack or a coffee spill on your keyboard, Backblaze offers rapid recovery options. You can even access your files from anywhere or get a hard drive shipped to your door with all your data. Return it within 30 days, and it's like it never happened, except you have your data back. And that's super important. It's so important. Can I say that again? It's so important. Over 55 billion files restored says it all. Don't be the one wishing you could turn back time. Head to backblaze.com/MGG. Mac Geek Gab listeners get a free trial. To see why Backblaze is recommended by Inc. magazine, go to backblaze.com/MGG and start your no-risk free trial. Because in the world of tech, don't get caught without a backup. Visit backblaze.com/MGG and let's keep those bad times at bay. And our thanks to Backblaze for sponsoring this episode. All right, now, have you ever felt like finding the right team member for your tech venture was like searching for a rare vintage Mac in a haystack? Well, that was me before our sponsor, LinkedIn Jobs. I've talked about Sadie on the show, our social media and promotions ninja, right? 3 years ago, I tapped into LinkedIn Jobs' vast network, over a billion professionals strong, and there she was, a perfect match. It's like finding that hidden setting on your Mac that suddenly makes everything work better. Using LinkedIn Jobs wasn't just throwing a post into the digital void, right? It was targeted, intuitive, and honestly, it's kind of fun, right? Their tools are so easy to use that it's like the difference between coding in assembly and Swift. You can do both, but one is just so much easier. And get this, 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate within 24 hours on LinkedIn Jobs. We did, and now Sadie's been with us, boosting our show for 3 years. It's like upgrading your RAM and feeling the turbocharge. So don't get caught in the slow lane of hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/MGG. That's linkedin.com/MGG to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Your Sadie is just a post away. And our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring this episode. All right, we got a quick tip from JT after the last episode, and in fact, we'll let JT tell us about it.
Gentlemen, in reference to episode 1026, you mentioned the UDP method to save your bacon with your iPhone. One other thing this does, or as Apple calls it, is a forced restart. I was experiencing an issue where within the app library in my social media folder, app icons were coming up blank. To remedy this, I was able to do the force restart, the UDP method, and the icons came back to life. Just another handy tip for that particular set of button presses.
Yeah.
Thanks. Have a great one.
Thanks for that, JT. That's interesting to me because that tells me that it's doing more than just shutting down and restarting your phone. Like it almost like a
clearing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
it's a hard reset,
a cache cleaning, you know, kind of a safe, but it's not restarting in safe mode or anything,
right.
but it is doing some of the stuff that like we know our Macs do when we restart in safe mode, doing, you know, whatever, some maintenance, whatever that maintenance is, we don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah. Hey, one other thing, though, and that's holding it down, holding the power button down until you see the Apple logo when it does that.
Correct.
One other thing, we talked about this a long time ago. I'll bring up, if you do up, down, and tap the power button and don't restart, that does disable your biometrics. So either your fingerprint or your face ID, you're going to have to put your password in order to remember. That's the mode that... That's the way to make it so your biometrics won't unlock the phone whilst in your pocket.
Right. Don't get caught. Yeah,
exactly. Don't get caught mode.
Yeah, it's don't get caught mode, which is good. I probably should have done that as I was like going through security in Mexico or something.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Always remember, you don't have Fourth Amendment rights out of the country.
Just no, saying. No, you don't. No, you don't. It's true. Yeah, yeah. Even though you think you do.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. You do have Fourth Amendment rights. They just don't exist there. You have them in the United States. Yeah.
You have them until you don't.
Yeah.
I just bring a little jar of U.S. soil for me to pour down and stand on.
There you go. And that'll get you arrested by the agriculture police, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. A little jar of U.S. soil.
Right.
I wonder if anyone's ever tried that. I would love it if I was, say, in an airport or something, if, you know, a foreign airport and somebody was having their... not their perceived rights violated, like and they poured their little soil. I am now
on U.S. soil.
I'm on U.S. soil. This is this is sovereign land. yeah, carry your own sovereign land. Yeah,
I'm sure they'll bring you a broom and a and a dustbin.
Yeah,
so you get to work.
Yeah, yeah, get to work. That's it. Yeah, yeah.
And when you're done, come with us to this little private room.
Yeah, and then we'll escort you. Don't come with us. We'll bring you there. That's right.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Also from episode 1026, Todd had a comment about our recipes discussion.
Yeah.
And he says, I gave up on all the recipe apps. They seem to change over time and stop doing things the way I like them. When that happens, transitioning from one app to another is always a pain, of course. Because of this, he says, I have standardized on the Notes app. I have a folder in Notes called Recipes. I often add a tag such as dessert, appetizer, Thanksgiving, etc. All recipes come down to ingredients, directions, and notes about the recipe. I copy and paste the recipe from one of those god-awful sites full of ads into BB Edit, do a little massaging, and paste that into a new note. Sometimes I add a link to the original source if I want. The recipe folder is shared with my wife and two sons. When we are somewhere and someone wants a recipe, Notes makes it very easy to send or just pull it up. Best of all, I control the recipes. No worries about an app or website shutting down. A little upfront work, getting the recipe in a new note pays off in a big way. I like this idea. It is how we do things in our house. Basically, you know, we've always just used the Notes app for recipes and sharing. And I love the idea of a shared recipes folder that we didn't do. However, I will offer one tip from 1026 that I think could make Todd and everyone's workflow better. And that is resurfacing the quick tip we mentioned, which is called justtherecipe.com. Because there you go, Pete. Everything all right over there?
You are okay.
I'm back. Sorry, I didn't hit the button in time.
That's correct.
The mute button is kicking my backside this morning. I'm sorry, gents.
That's all right. But that justtherecipe.com, it automates the process of doing what he talked about with BB Edit, copying and pasting into BB Edit to remove all the extraneous formatting. So, so try that out, and maybe that plus Notes is the magic answer. So, yeah. Stuff.
Yeah, I'm a markdown guy, so I do everything in Ulysses. But that's only because I'd like to write everything in Markdown. I switched to that workflow a long, long time ago, and syncs through the cloud, and I have it on all my devices. And there's a Ulysses app for, well, it's in beta, it's in test flight, but the Ulysses app for Vision Pro, I was excited about. So,
interesting.
I tried to become proficient in Markdown a couple times. That's tough. Is Ulysses help you do that?
No, I mean, it does all the formatting for you and stuff like that. And yeah, there's shortcuts, but I know how to write it. So I just write it, and then it converts it into, like, makes it look pretty.
Yeah.
And then you can export it. And I also use Marked, obviously for converting things.
I know the basics, but I've seen some amazing, tables and, shading and titling. And
yeah, that's extended Markdown. I mostly basic Markdown, but yeah, you can do basic tables and things like that. But the reason I moved to that flow, it's really inspired a lot by David Sparks, which is like, with the other tools, I can create a Word document from that. I can create a PDF, a formatted PDF from that. And my core files are now all in just text. So plain they text, will always universal. Be accessible. It does not matter what application changes happen, what, you know, it's a text file at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And text is always supported. So,
yeah. So I understand Ulysses. You explain that well. It's an app that you can put text into and it understands Markdown and it syncs and all of those great things. My question is about the Marked. You said, and obviously I use the Marked app. Why?
Oh yeah. Obviously. Yeah. Marked is this great app from Brett Terpstra.
Okay.
And yep. It is a very simple app. I think it's in, I want to say it's still in setup. I can't remember.
It is.
But yep. It lets you open any Markdown file and basically convert it. So it has templates you can build and you can do all kinds of conversions. So there's pre-built templates. And so you can also use it for live display. So if you just have a Markdown file and you want to see it formatted really pretty as a Word document or a PDF or whatever format, it does that in real time. So when you make the change in the Markdown file that you've pointed it at, it will do the formatting for you.
Interesting.
Yeah, it'll save it as HTML. It's amazing. And everything, right?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, you can convert Markdown into everything. So that's what I love about it is you have just a text file. Once you learn it, you have just a text file. And I use it at work all the time because everybody wants Word documents. So sure. I write everything in Markdown, all my notes in Markdown, and send everybody a pretty Word doc.
And you use Marked to do that conversion for you.
To preview it. Yeah. You can do it also in Ulysses, but I like Marked just because it has a lot of options and you can build templates if you want. So you could customize, you know, how you want the fonts to look and how you want rules to look and the different levels. So it's basically like the styling for your Markdown file.
Yeah.
You can control in there.
Yeah. I need to get, I had started using Markdown for like even just putting things in WordPress because it will support that. I guess I need to have your help, Adam, because our Mac Geek Gab WordPress, everything borks when I turn on Markdown editing. I don't in the WYSIWYG editor, like it just won't show things anymore. So,
right.
We'll
take a look at that.
There's some JavaScript like, you know, thing butting heads together, I'm sure. But yeah, interesting. All right. Yeah. I got to get back into Markdown for sure.
So you mentioned David Sparks. I believe he even wrote a field guide on.
I think he might have a Markdown field guide. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
which is a digital book that will teach you all kinds of things.
I put a link to all of these things in our lovingly handcrafted show notes, which are available at MacGeekGab.com. We do not write them in Markdown, at least not currently.
But
yet. I'm starting to think all the formatting that we use in Google Docs, WordPress also hates that. So if I can get Markdown working,
Markdown working,
then we just do the show notes in Markdown and we're good to go.
Notes kind of converts some of it too, I think, you know,
does it? Okay.
Yeah.
But they're all there. And if you go to MacGeekGab.com, you'll see them, organized by episode, all the show notes, they are searchable. And if you want them in your email box, simply subscribe to our email. We promise we don't spam you unless you consider getting the episode show notes spam, in which case we absolutely spam you.
Every week.
Yeah. Like clockwork now, especially that, thanks to Allison Sheridan for nudging me on this. I fixed the thing that caused the show notes email to be delayed. It was a caching of the feed that is used to pull those. And I just needed to fix that. Then I did, like, as those of you who are subscribed now likely know, they actually come on time.
Dave, one other term you mentioned for many people know it, but for the up and coming geeks who aren't quite there yet, WYSIWYG. Mm. What you see is what you get.
Yeah, that's what you get with us. And we're sorry about that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We are indeed. We humbly apologize.
We're sorry.
At this point in time.
For those of you that choose to watch us, what you see is what you get. And you have our deepest sympathies.
In this case, and today, what you hear is what you get. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
How about I take us to Jim and
please
get us out of
there? Yeah, ripcord.
Yeah. So Jim writes in, he says, hi, guys. I recently rearranged. Let me back up and say this particularly hit close to home because this sounds exactly like something I would do to myself and then have to go to Dave and go, please help. Hi, guys. I recently rearranged my desk and in the process disconnected my Synology NAS 718 from both power and Ethernet connection. And when I reconnected, I tried to log in from a bookmark I had previously created. No luck, because the IP address had changed from what it previously had been. I did a quick search and came across a Synology Knowledge Base article entitled, How Do I Find My Synology NAS Via Web Assistant or Synology Assistant? The simplest and quickest way for me was to type find.synology.com into my browser, and in a few seconds, it had located my NAS. I noted the IP address, updated my Safari bookmark and logged in, and on to the next task. Thanks to all of the MGG crew for all you do. I started listening sometime before episode 10 and have listened ever since. What, you can't go back and listen to the first nine? Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says, well, you may have cost me a few bucks here and there to buy some new toys. You saved me a lot more money and time than I can measure with your quick tips, cool stuff found, and answers to listener questions. Ratgox rock.
Do you know what ratgok means, Pete? It's a term that Jim came up with. I feel like we workshopped it together, but this is definitely a Jim thing. It is reasonable and trusted geeks of choice.
That's us.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. And so I wanted to bring that along to everybody as well. And the other thing you can do, obviously, is put tail scale. That'll help you find it, though that isn't a good local thing, but you can put tail scale on your Synology. The other thing I did is I went into my router and took the MAC address of my Synology drive and hard assigned it an IP address so that it would, no matter what I did, as soon as it sees that MAC IP address, it brings me back to .1.2.
Got it. Yes, that makes sense. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, a DHCP reservation essentially is what it is. So based on the MAC address of my drive.
Yeah, I do that for all of my devices on my router.
Yeah.
Just because I like to know where things are.
Do you do it for your phones, Adam?
I do, yeah.
Really?
I have a document, a markdown document.
There you go.
Tells me where each one is.
Oh, yeah.
What each one's IP address is.
I have a spreadsheet. This is, oh my gosh. How have we gone 1,026 episodes without ever having this conversation? I have the same thing in a spreadsheet, which I like because I have the IP address that I assign to it, the DNS name of the device, because I want to assign it, you know, like.
Yep.
Yep.
The name.
Correct. Yep. And I want that to be the same no matter what. And then I have the MAC address in there, and then I have a notes field. And so it's all, you know, a spreadsheet lets me keep it in columns and all of those things. But yes, absolutely.
I have the same exact thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I need to update mine. I haven't done it in a while, but I find it really helpful to know, like I'll assign Debbie, you know, .10 through .19 and me .20 through .29, that sort of thing. And I'll know that my computer is, you know, and hers is 11 and mine is 21. My phone is 22 and hers is 12 and such. So if I ever had to SSH in, then I know where they are without even having to go look it up.
Yeah.
I do that part too. I have all mine in ranges. So like my media devices are all in one range. My networking equipment's all in one range. My iPhones are all in one range. My Macs are all in one range. Yeah. That's how I broke it up.
Yep. I did the same thing. Yep. Yep.
And I'll re-ask the question that I asked a few weeks ago. Is anal retentive hyphenated?
Well, but this is super helpful.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a great way to know where your stuff is.
Yes,
yeah. And it is. To be able to access it in the event your computer locks up and you want to SSH in from your iPhone, you can do it.
Yeah, I don't do it with my iPhone. And the umbrella statement for that is I don't do it for devices that I would never want to connect to as like a server or a network resource. So, and that's only, it's not that I have anything, there's nothing bad about doing it for your iPhones. It's just that's more work. I don't need to know what IP address my iPhone is on. Like, that doesn't matter to me. I'm not saying it's bad if it matters to you. It's just for me, I'm okay. But I want all of my desktop Macs. I even do it with my laptops because I will sometimes want to connect to those. So my Macs all have reserved IPs, and my disk stations do, you know, those kinds of things. Obviously my router, but that sort of goes without saying. And some other things that get, like printers for sure, get their own IPs. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that, like, I give them to, I mean, I guess I could bring up the spreadsheet and then I could tell you.
Yeah. while you do that, I have a question. Am I the only noob who uses Synology Disk Assistant? Because going back to the original question, that's often how I find my
Is Synology. That the little app you run on your Mac?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it just launches the IP.
Yeah.
Like, it shows, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Oh.
I didn't know the app existed. Oh.
Yeah. I don't run it.
I'm a noob.
Yeah,
I'm a noob.
Yeah, it's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. It like being a noob is like that. We are all noobs about certain things. Like right. Nobody, none of us, none of the three of us here and none of us listening can be an expert and knowledgeable about all the things, even all the things Apple. It's just not possible. There might have been a day where it was, but that day is gone. All my switches, my smart network switches get IP addresses. Those, however, I hard code into the switch. I do make a reservation for them, but they are hard coded into the switch so that if the switch comes up, even if my router is down, I can still connect to the switch at the IP address that I know it will be at. So
that's good. That's good advice. Yeah.
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 So one other quick question, though, Dave, along those lines, as you know, I was trying to do some troubleshooting here at our Florida place this week.
Yeah.
And what I couldn't determine was whether my modem was good or not. Do you remember is it .1.100, .100.1? What is generally the standard modem interface? Where is it? 192.168.
Yeah. So for a DOCSIS cable modem, this is not the case with any other fiber, ISD, whatever, nothing. Why was I going to say ISDN? Does anybody have an ISDN connection anymore?
I've got a 300 baud modem.
Yeah, thanks. That's great.
I've got acoustic old radio stations, maybe?
I've got an acoustic coupler. It's 192.168.100.1. And I will even put a link to this in the show notes, but it's the DOCSIS modem.
So my modem was definitely bad then because I could not, I was trying that and I couldn't get it. And,
yeah.
You know, they were trying to send a reset signal and all that, which ultimately I just finally gave up and went over to T-Mobile and did the home internet gateway. And
so let's talk about that. I mean, this show's off the rails already, which is great. Like, we're all learning things. It's like off the rails is a relative term. But you texted me while I was in Mexico and you started sending me speed tests and you're like, this is on T-Mobile. I'm like, oh, did you move from like Mint Mobile to T-Mobile for your international travels? And you're like, no, I still have Mint. This is my home internet at your house in Florida. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That's great. And I'm, you know, in Mexico, I didn't have my phone with me while we were out flinking, but I probably had just finished flinking. So, you know, I had a couple of cocktails in me or whatever. I found this year, I really liked drinking mezcal and soda with lime. Adds a little flavor to it.
Flavor through there.
Yeah.
Still
and
some carbonation.
If you order tequila, soda, and lime at the you know, the pool bar, you'll get like bottom of the barrel tequila in you know, from the well. But mezcal, they don't have that in the well, so that's got to come off the shelf. So, but you know, it didn't dawn on me until like yesterday. I'm like, wait a minute, Pete's gonna be doing the podcast from Florida, and he's on that T-Mobile connection. It's no longer wired. Is this going to be a disaster? No, I knock on wood.
Counting on Pete.
Yeah. But we're 45 minutes into the recording of the show. We're an hour and 20 into our connection here. And again, I just knocked on wood, but it's fine.
Yeah, knock wood. It has been rock solid all week long. It's just crushing it. I'm streaming 4K video. Mac was playing on his iPad in his room. The computers were going full steam.
You know, do me a favor. Open up a terminal window.
Okay.
And just type ping space www.apple.com. Just because I'm curious how low and also how consistent your pings are. Now you're on a Wi-Fi connection.
Yes.
So there's also that, which is, you know.
I forgot to tell it to stop.
Control C will tell it to stop. Yeah.
The highest that I've seen is, hang on. Did it go away from there?
I'm just curious what the range that you're seeing is on that.
The lowest is down in the 36 milliseconds. The highest I've seen is 47 milliseconds.
Oh, okay. So.
Oh, there's a 51. Sorry.
Okay, but it's not jumping up into the hundreds.
No, not even close.
Good. That's really good. Oh, man.
Yeah. Wow. This thing is, it's rocking it.
Huh.
If you put it on, it's $65 a month, but if you put it on auto pay, like of a debit card or out of your checking account, it's $60 a month.
Yeah, of course.
And it's unlimited data up to, and I think it advertises up to 500 megabits up and down, down. And I think, I forget what the number up is, but it's, look, I uploaded, I recorded, so there I was, and I uploaded a gigabyte show. I forget how many I think about a gigabyte show in under 3 minutes.
Yeah. That's amazing. That really, I mean, we knew that when 5G came out, that what you just described was going to be a reality, like a workable reality eventually. Right. And you know, we also knew that this was about the timing of it. So
and it's not available in every area. When you go to their site, you have to put in your zip code and your address and it'll go, not yet.
Yeah.
So, and I suppose you could put it in your RV and travel around with it, but I think they would shut you down because you're going to start crushing other people's areas with that if it's not up to, if their network isn't up to snuff there.
Yeah. Right. So. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I do know of people who use it in RVs and I mean it, you know, you don't tell them that's what you're doing. Don't get caught. But, that's pretty good.
So,
what was that, Pete? I was going to tell him about parallels. No, it's fine.
I think it was a delay from my internet.
No, that was on me. That was on me. Go ahead. No, yeah, it's fine.
No, I was just saying. So, yeah, just agreeing. I'm out of the way.
All right, folks. Have you ever felt like your Mac was a superhero with one hand tied behind its back because you couldn't run your Windows apps? Enter our sponsor, Parallels Desktop. The tech equivalent of giving your Mac a utility belt. I've zipped through the Parallels setup faster than a quick reboot, and let me tell you, it's like watching your Mac flex muscles you didn't even know it had. Suddenly, Windows-only apps appear, like Power BI, and yes, even games like Fortnite are running smoothly without ever having to leave macOS. And for those of you craving the unmatched prowess of Excel or PowerPoint on Windows, or itching to dive into Windows exclusive gaming realms without betraying your Mac love, of course, Parallels Desktop is your secret passage. No more carrying around two laptops or syncing nightmares, none of it. It's like having your cake and eating it too, with a side of extra frosting. You ever just eat the frosting? That's kind of like what Parallels Desktop is. Web developers, imagine coding and testing across platforms without the desk clutter. Students, picture running Office 365 and AutoCAD without begging your budget for mercy. Don't get caught wishing for what could be. Unlock your Mac's full potential and save yourself 15% with code MGG15 at parallels.com/MGG. That's code MGG15 at parallels.com/MGG to save yourself 15%. And with a 30-day money-back guarantee, it's like trying on a new tech suit with zero risk. So why wait? Give your Mac the power to do it all. Parallels.com/MGG. Code MGG15 saves you 15%. And our thanks to Parallels for sponsoring this episode. All right. Chris writes, after at least 10 years of listening to MacCast, I followed you over to MGG and I'm enjoying the tips and tricks. Amazing. I have a question, he says, about using the Apple 27-inch Thunderbolt display on a Windows laptop. I absolutely love these displays, and despite their age, I think they're some of the best displays out there. None of the PC monitors seem as crisp and clear as these, which is why I bought three of them. Good for you. One on my 2012 Mac Mini and another used to run on my 2019 16-inch MacBook Pro. Unfortunately, I changed jobs and now I have to use a Windows laptop for work. It's a Dell Latitude 7440, which, according to Dell, has two Thunderbolt 4 ports with DisplayPort, Alt Mode, USB-C, USB 4 power delivery. I tried with the Apple Thunderbolt 3 USB-C to Thunderbolt 2 adapter, which I used on the 16-inch MacBook Pro, but I'm not getting any picture, and there isn't a power button or indicator on the Thunderbolt display. I would think that the TB4 port is backward compatible with both TB2 and TB3. Do you have any tips for making this work? Adam, he followed you here. You want to try this
one? Yep. Well, first of all, Chris, thanks for coming along for the ride. We really like having you here, and I like being here, so that's great that we can all come together. Thunderbolt 4 definitely should be backward compatible with Thunderbolt 3 and Thunderbolt 2. That, you're absolutely right there. So this baffled me a little bit as well. I did some Googling, and I found a thread over on Dell's website, and it's possibly related to an update they did to their Dell firmware back in 2021 that is causing the displays to no longer authorize with the system. It seems like it's still unresolved, so who knows if they're ever going to address it. I would imagine, I agree with you on those displays, amazing displays. My guess is like Dell probably doesn't care too much that it broke old, a really old Thunderbolt display, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah,
I mean,
sucks.
But did it break? I guess my question is, did it break all Thunderbolt displays or just Apple's?
No, it sounds like it broke a bunch of Thunderbolt displays.
Okay. So this wasn't.
I don't know if it's only a certain era or not. But
Know that Apple sometimes does things, a little bit different than the standard. I would have been surprised to learn that they did Thunderbolt different from the standard because they've been really good about that. In fact, Apple has been sort of the shining star of following the Thunderbolt spec. We wouldn't need Thunderbolt 4 if everybody followed the spec like Apple did with Thunderbolt 3, but, be that as it may. So, yeah.
Yeah. We'll link to the article. You can read through the full thing. I didn't fully read through it, but it was very obvious that it broke Apple's display. So I don't know. I would assume it broke multiple Thunderbolt displays and maybe with specific controllers or, who knows?
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. That's too bad. I'm wondering, would there be a reason that putting a Thunderbolt dock in the middle, right? Between the, you know what I'm saying? Like a dock that has passed through.
Maybe if it had its own controller or something like that. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I realize the display has its own Thunderbolt dock in it because it's not actually a Thunderbolt display. It's a DisplayPort display that has, that's on the other side of a Thunderbolt dock. Right. So, yeah. Huh. I don't know. It's just something to ponder. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com if you know the answer or you have any tips or anything like that. Or you can join the Discord at MacGeekGab.com/Discord. Love to have you in both places. Time to go to Mace.
Let's do it.
You want to take that one, Adam?
Yeah.
Actually, if I can get my notes prepped back up.
I know. So, Adam's going to read it for you.
I knew that.
Read it for you. Yeah. I knew that. Yeah,
got it right here.
Yep.
All right. Mace says that my wife got four suspicious emails in rapid succession this morning. My question is about her iCloud@iCloud.com email address. I wanted to change the password to it, but I couldn't find a reference to that password in LastPass. Do you get access to your @iCloud.com email via your Apple ID password? Is that the Apple ID password that I would want to change?
And Absolutely. That's it. So what you need to do is go to your Apple ID account page, and that's appleid.apple.com, and sign in with your current Apple ID and password. And under the sign in and security section, click on password, and you'll be asked to enter your current password, then a new password, and confirm it. And after changing the password, you'll need to sign back in with your new password on all your devices that use your Apple ID. And if you've turned on stolen device protection, you have now more problems.
More delays, at least. Yes.
Yeah. More delays and hoops through which you must now jump. So remember, it affects all your Apple services and that use your Apple ID, not just your iCloud email. So you need to update your password on the other devices, as I said. The note says, because stolen device protection is turned on, some of your account information can't be changed on the web. You'll have to go change your password and use it on other devices, be it your phone and that sort of thing. You can't just change. You're going to have to change it on those devices as well, is my understanding. I think the simple solution is turn off stolen device protection.
Wait it out.
Accomplish the change. Yep. Wait out the wait and then turn it back on. Yeah. That would be the simplest approach.
I do want to add something to this. Everything you said is correct, right? Like if you want to change your iCloud password, that's your iCloud email password is your iCloud password. All of that stuff is true. There's an asterisk there. If you're using like an IMAP client to connect to it, you'd have to create a less secure password for that. But that's a whole different thing. However, receiving spam or phishing emails into your email address is not necessarily just the receipt of them is right. not necessarily cause for alarm enough that I would go change my password. If I clicked on a link and it asked me to log into my iCloud account and I realized, oh my gosh, I just typed my password in to not Apple's website, then yes, 100%. But just because you received a piece of email, spam, phishing, legitimate email from the folks at feedback@macgeekup.com, just receiving a piece of email does not mean that there has been any security risk. Even if you get that email from your own address, if it appears to be from your own address, it could be that someone got access, but that's the hard way of doing it. The easy way is to just spoof your email address and send an email as though it were from you. And if someone sets up their own mail server, then that's what they get to do. So,
spoofing is surprisingly easy to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's getting harder with all like the SPF and DMARC stuff that you can put on domains, which is good.
Yep.
And iCloud domains are, Apple does do a decent job of protecting its iCloud domains with those pieces of tech. So it would be less likely to get phishing emails from an iCloud domain. Or if you did, they'd probably be marked as spam because they're not matching the SPF or the DMARC stuff or whatever it is. So,
I got a surprisingly effective phishing email this week myself, and it was ostensibly from Dick's Sporting Goods. Take a survey and we'll give you this cooler. You know, okay, great. Sure. I took the quick survey and I'm like, all right, all you have to do is pay a $7 shipping fee. Okay. And then started looking at it and then I went, oh yeah, I should have probably checked out the URL long before I got to this point. Yeah. Yep. But what if they're all going on basic human greed?
Yep. Always is. It always is.
So, but so frustrating.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, almost got me.
Be diligent out there.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned the first thing they did was ask you to fill out a survey. Be careful when filling out surveys that you are filling them out for the source that you believe has asked for that data, because with enough information from you from multiple sources, anything you might divulge seemingly innocuously in a survey could potentially be used to, you know, as a social engineering attack to get someone to change your password on your behalf or whatever. So just think about that.
Building quite the profile for them.
Yeah, you're building, right. You're letting, or you, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Any thoughts on that, Adam, or you want to take us to Michael?
No, we're good. Let's go to Michael.
Right.
Because he's got a very weird, weird audio bug.
Okay.
And it was something that it was over on, he linked us over to an article at Mac Rumors, but apparently there's this long-standing audio bug with the balance on the audio where it can just randomly fade, you know, so the left-right balance in your sound settings on your Mac, and it could just randomly fade. And I guess this bug, he says, has been around for about 12 years now, and Apple just hasn't addressed it. Yeah, and so he was asking us about that, and I basically said, well, that's odd to me and interesting at the same time. I've actually personally never experienced this bug in 10 years, at least that I'm aware of. And so the bug is, Apple says, in some cases, audio balance may unexpectedly drift toward the left or right channel. This can happen if you rapidly press the volume up or down button keys while the computer's microprocessor is under heavy load. So it's like a very specific set of circumstances. So like your Mac has to be cranking, and then you have to be physically using the volume up and down key on your keyboard and pressing that very, very rapidly. So yes, it's odd that Apple has a bug that's been out there for 12 years, but as a developer and knowing probably the massive list of bugs that Apple has, my assumption is this happens so rarely and to so few people that it just keeps getting bumped down the list. You know, they have a list and they prioritize that list and they're probably going like, yeah, this is really annoying and we'd like to fix this, but you know, we've got bigger fish to fry.
That's really weird. It probably has nothing to do with Core Audio, but I'm just going to blame it on Apple not quite getting Core Audio quite right, because I can. There is an app mentioned in that Mac Rumors article from TunaBelly called Balance Lock. And so if you experience this, or if you just want to, you know, play it safe, go get Balance Lock. It's available for free in the Mac App Store. And the folks at TunaBelly are trusted. They are rat gawks as well, reasonable and trusted geeks of choice. And so I haven't used this app, but I have no issue with them. But yeah, that's interesting. Huh.
I actually see this now as an Easter egg. Like, I want to see if I can make this happen.
Yeah, exactly. But good luck on it. Like, I was thinking, I bet this bug has moved even farther down Apple's list with Apple Silicon, because it's less likely for us to be
good luck loading up that chip.
Right. Yeah. Pixelmator. Every time I launch Pixelmator, I have it opening like six documents that each have hundreds of layers and images. They're all the episode images, with a little bit of foreshadowing to the next question unintentionally, but, all the episode images. So all, you know, it has all of the historical data in there. I archive them off like once every few years, but they're big. And so I, even on my Mac Studio here, when I launch Pixelmator, my CPU's peg for, you know, 5 seconds or something while it, which is great. I would, if an app needs to use the CPU, by all means, I feel like that's what it's there for. Yeah. So that might be a way, but of course I don't use an audio device on this that the Mac has control over the balance on. So I would never have experienced it here either. I don't have my volume knobs working. If another tip, you use external, non inbuilt audio devices, like, you know, an external interface or whatever, and it does not support the Mac's volume controls on the keyboard, but you would like it to, you can do that with Rogue Amoeba's Sound Source, which is an awesome little app. It does that and many other things. You can have it where alerts, well, you could do this on the Mac too, so that's a bad example, but you could have it where one app has its sound go out one device, one app, another app has its sound go out a different device. You can have the balance of apps be different with sound source. It's a great little utility, but the kind of the main thing that brings most people in is I want to be able to use my max volume buttons on the keyboard with a not inbuilt thing. And sound source will do that. So
those forks over at Rogue Amoeba, they kind of understand sound.
Yeah, magic. I wish Apple would listen to them more than they already do. I'm sure they do. Yeah. But about the core audio stuff, I had an issue, and it happened during an episode. I'm sure it will happen again unless Apple has just fixed it without acknowledging it again. But where everything resets core audio wise, and that throws logic for a tizzy, which I use as my mixer. So that's why, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 weeks ago where I had to like reset Logic to come back online and audibly. And I mentioned it to Rogue Amoeba because I thought it had something to do with loopback or something else. And they're like, oh yeah, no, we see this too. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Mm. Like keep reporting it to Apple. I'm like, yep, same.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering if either of you have experienced this or any of our audience has. This is on the Mac, but it's on the iPhone. I listen to a podcast or two. I don't know if you guys do or not, but I have noticed recently, for no apparent reason, I'm not touching the volume buttons or anything like that, the volume will go up on me or down on me. And it's not ambient sound with my AirPods in. So,
what app do you use to listen to podcasts?
Downcast, usually. Huh. Occasionally Apple Podcasts, but usually it's Downcast. I can't figure out why it's doing it. I can't reliably replicate it, but it happens frequently.
Man.
And yeah, so.
That's a geek challenge.
You haven't. There you go. A geek challenge.
I don't think I've experienced that. I mean, if I have, I probably, without even thinking about it, would just grab my phone and push the volume down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm wondering if I have some setting somewhere down in there but the ambient noise has not gone up, therefore causing my volume to be increased, but who knows?
Maybe it thinks.
So I just thought I'd ask if either of you had had that. So, and one other thing, folks, I want you to understand that it's a thing of beauty to watch. While talking about Rogue Amoeba's sound source, Dave was updating the show notes, types out sound source, goes to the webpage, grabs a link, and puts it in there, all without missing a beat. It's a thing of beauty to watch. Yeah, producing the show whilst talking on the show.
I did all those things except one of them. I didn't go, the order was different. I typed the word sound source. Google Docs has a cool thing, and this is a quick tip. I highlighted the word sound source, and then I hit Command K, and it Google Docs, that Command K is the shortcut to add a link to text. Right. But if you're logged in addition to having the option to just type or paste a link in, it will search Google for the text that you have highlighted. And in most cases, this being one of them, it like sound source from Rogue Amoeba shows up on the list. So I just get to select it. So that's how it happened. And then I clicked it, which opened in my web browser. And that's what you saw and you put up on the screen for folks who are watching. So
there you go.
So there are shortcuts to my madness here. Google Docs is cool. Yeah.
But to be able to talk and type and do all that, it's a thing of beauty to watch.
Yeah. Sometimes, though, I realize either I have no idea what one of you said because I got into that, like, you know, the multitasking myth, right?
Yep.
Other times, I have no idea what I just said while I've been doing that. And both of those things are scary when you're releasing a show that goes out to tens of thousands of people.
Right. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've gone back and listened to one of, so there I was, and go, I did. I totally missed that while I'm editing the show. I missed that because I was doing some production thing and it's like, oh, that's awesome.
Yep. So. All right. Well, since we're on the sausage making, you want to take us to Jason's question?
I can do so. Longtime listener and love the show as always. It would be awesome to see the prompts that you used to create the show album artwork. The artwork captures the show title and the show and the title so well. Perhaps simply just including in the show notes, I consistently see the artwork and wonder what was the prompt they used to create that. For the latest egg and chicken problem, the best reverse engineered prompt I could find was painting of a teacher and a chicken in a classroom, creative VFX, science poster, funny cartoonish, identical prime lens, no yellow color, eggshell color, Hisham, hibachi, this kind of smart, epic diptych in a lab, reduce duplicate content, very nerdy, doesn't seem to get it right. Are you all using DALL-E 3 via ChatGPT Plus for creation? And because I love to create more work for Dave, I promised all the listeners that Dave would put in every show note, every prompt, every just.
You know, it's a good
not
idea.
Quite that much,
it's totally fine. Yeah, it was interesting reading this because I often do when I'm inspired by something we've said in the show that I think, oh, this would make a good title. Let's see what the artwork is. I will create in real time the artwork while we're doing the show.
Right.
Because of that, the prompts are much shorter than you might think. But yes. I consider in this instance, it's not that I have an image in mind that I am trying to get ChatGPT to draw for me. If that were the case, I would give it, you know, a paragraph full, like Jason said.
And then it will ignore half of them anyway.
Yeah, exactly. it doesn't, and it especially doesn't iterate on artwork well at all. Like if I tell it, oh yeah, what you just made is awesome. Make this one change. What you get next is remarkably different. It's almost unrelated. So the one for last week for 1026, all I said was I wanted two options at once. And you're showing this week's, Pete. So,
never mind.
It's fine. Well, that's fine. You can leave that
out
because this is probably what will be this week's image. But last week, I wanted just two options, and I didn't want to have to go back and tell it, make me another option. So I said, make me two wide aspect ratio images that illustrate the egg and chicken problem humorously, different from the chicken and egg problem, right? I wanted it to be the reverse of that. Make it nerdy if you want, and definitely make it funny. And that's what I said, and that's it, you know. And I got the first thing that I got was the image that we wound up using with the two eggs being nerdy in their respective laboratories, and I was like, well, that's kind of what I asked for, but you know what, that's good enough. And so I thought, well, my next prompt was great. Now make just one image, and it did. And that one you folks didn't see, but if you're watching the video, I'm scrolling through it now and on ChatGPT, and this looks like the Senate, like the Senate chambers of old, with chickens and eggs as the people, and it's weird, you know. And I thought about using that one, and then I said, make one image that looks more like the right half of the first one. And it kind of did that for me, and I almost did that. And this was a chicken with an egg floating in the air in a laboratory with beakers and that sort of thing. And by that point, I was like, all right, I have three choices. I'm going to pick one of these. And I wound up picking the first one, and off we went. So that was last week. This episode, which at this moment in time has not yet been published for me, but at this moment in time for most of you listening, it has been published for you. So you will know what image we have chosen. But I thought, oh, this idea of RatGox, like, that's kind of funny, like reasonable and trusted geek of choice. So I said, create a wide aspect ratio image of RatGox and make it funny. And then in parentheses, I put, for reference, that means reasonable and trusted geeks of choice. And it made me probably the image that we'll use with a bunch of people in a room, some of them nerdier than others. It's a very cluttered room. And it says RatGox at the top.
It actually spelled it correctly.
It spelled RatGox correctly. The text underneath it, if I leave it in there, is absolutely not even close to right. But
it's gibberish.
It's gibberish, right. But, you know, it's got the vibe. And I said, amazing, make another, please, which I've learned. I just keep telling it to iterate. And then we get this one of like a scientist with his head in the clouds and a couple of
dogs. It looks like rat ears, too, almost.
Yeah, maybe. So let's see, you know, make it rattier. So I don't know what they'll happen with that. You know, it takes about 30 seconds for it to make an image. So I don't know what's going to happen with this, but yeah, I'm using DALL-E, and I'm using ChatGPT or DALL-E as a collaborator in this, not as grunt work, right? And there's a difference because I'm willing to kind of go with whatever it might show me within reason. And it, that's unlike where if I tell it to, well, I know what and image we're using. It just came, the rats just came, the nerdy rats just came up. And these, of course, are the ones that you're going to see on the episode show notes. But if you want to see the rest, you can watch the YouTube video of this segment and it'll have it in there. But yeah, I'm willing to just kind of like, you know, let the process evolve and whatever happens, happens. Gosh, that's freaking brilliant.
Right. The cheese and everything.
There's cheese floating.
Nuclear symbol on the balloon.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
My favorite still is go look at episode 1009, folks. That was where you have our permission. And we mentioned the term goat rodeo. And oh, boy.
Yep. Yep.
Almost broke out laughing like this.
Yeah, mid-episode. Yeah, because so. Pete and Adam can see my screen, my shared screen all the time. Even if it's not on the screen, it's in like a little preview window for those of us, you know, recording the show. And yeah, so it's, you know, what was that 1009 you said?
1009.
I'll link to it in the show notes. So that's now linked in the.
You have our permission
in the show notes. Yeah. Yepper. So, you know. There was we didn't get to any cool stuff found other than the things that we kind of casually mentioned. That's all right. We'll do cool stuff found next. Maybe we'll start with cool stuff found for 1028. Yeah. Anything else that either one of you wants to mention? If there is a cool stuff found, like now's the time. We're at the hour 16 mark, so we're technically kind of ready to wrap up. But, you know, if there's something cool, otherwise we save it for next week. You let me know. Anything?
Yeah. I'll mention, you know, I got from Mirai, M-I-R-A-I,
yep.
The next generation of their speaker that crispens the audio, the voice audio the people that are hard of hearing. What little I've done playing with, I'll do a full review, obviously, for the channel, but I've have found that Mirai, M-I-R-A-I, yep. Speaker is... those things are just fantastic. They, for someone who's trying to lose his hearing, when there is ambient noise, I find it so difficult to hear the spoken word. And these speakers just make them so crisp and clear.
Amazing.
The audio is fantastic. So if you have someone in your home who is starting to lose their hearing, the first one I ever got, I've got on my mother's TV in the nursing home, and it makes it so she's able to hear.
That's great.
Her hearing isn't horrible, but it isn't great, and she's able to hear. So speakers are fantastic. Great. So there's a cool stuff found for you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
What solved that hearing thing for me with movies is the Vision Pro or using my AirPods Pro. Mm. That's how I resolved that. But that's not very social. Like you can't be
right.
So this is a great option for that. Yeah.
Protect your hearing, folks. Do everything you can to protect your hearing when you are. And I use on my Apple Watch, and this is not just available on the Ultra. It's available on certainly the Series 5 and later, maybe even before that. Right on the as a complication, I have the dB meter. And that dB meter on the Apple Watch is astonishingly accurate. I've compared it against pro level dB meters, and it's usually within 1 or 2 dB. That's a pretty big variance. Don't get me wrong, but it's close enough that you'll know, are you in the danger zone or not? And if you're in anything above like 88 dB for an extended period of time, it will take a toll on your hearing. And
absolutely,
you know, earplugs are inexpensive. They are, and they're easy to keep with you. I mean, you can get, you can spend, I don't know, whatever, $150 on custom fit earplugs that are super comfortable and, you know, make the sound just sound like you turn down the volume and they're amazing. But for, you know, between $15 and $40, you can get universal fit earplugs that are fantastic. A lot of people like the Eargasm earplugs that are available on like Amazon and the sort. What do they cost now on Amazon? They're $42. People really, really like these. There's all all kinds of great earplugs out there. Yeah. But yeah, just protect you. I'll put more in the show notes. I will flesh this out with more earplugs.
I always use the little foamies and double hearing protection when I fly in Harriers. And the problem is everybody, all my buds who flew Harriers are in the same boat. We all have this tinnitus or tinnitus, whatever your pronunciation is, that it's horrible. Even wearing double hearing protection, that's that high bypass turbofan engine that has a really high pitched level to it. And that seems to be where we're all stuck.
Yeah.
With that ringtone.
Yeah.
For me, my mistake was going to, and I didn't even think about it at the time till it was too late. We went to a Civil War reenactment and they shot those cannons and I didn't even realize it. But about 2 weeks later, I woke up in the middle of the night tonight, full tinnitus, and I've had it ever since.
Oh.
And I'm convinced that that's where the damage happened.
At least put you over the edge. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. There's another earplug that I actually tested out and used while we were in Mexico at those concerts. It's about in the price range ish of the custom fits. It's not custom fit. It's universal fit. It's called the Minuendo, and it's from a company called Soundbrenner. It's $170 on Amazon. What's cool about these, very comfortable, very small. They basically disappear into yours, but you can remove them. It's not like it's a problem. They have an adjustment slider on them where you get to control how much it's blocking, and it goes from 7 dB at the lowest to 25 dB at the highest. And that's pretty cool to be able to kind of dial that in. You know, 25 is a lot, and at an outdoor concert, and the band Phish really, they respect their audience. I mean, they probably were at about 92 dB most nights, which is something you want to protect yourself from, but it's not 105 dB, which I've seen some bands do. Right. Which is crazy because 3 dB doubles the amount of sound. So think about that. Right. But, you know, even 90.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's logarithmic. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why earlier when I said, you know, the difference of 1 or 2 dB is substantial. It is. Most humans can't hear a 1 dB difference, but most of us can hear a 2 dB difference.
Okay.
But, you know, being able to adjust it and dial it in like, oh, I only need like half down. Okay. And looking at my watch and being like, all right, they're at 92. So if I'm blocking about 15, that's great. And 15 is a good amount to block for most concert goers.
What about the frequency? Do all the frequencies get through? Because I find that, you know, obviously with the spongies and stuff, you lose a lot of the lower end. And
you lose the high end. You get the lower end.
You keep the lower end. Yeah.
The Minuendos are acoustically balanced. So like the Eargasms are. And so you really get you get a decent sound.
Okay.
There was another brand called Loop Earplugs, and I think they're still making them. They are. My family went nuts over these Loop earplugs for a long time. Lisa used them up until she finally got custom fits. But they kind of have a little bit of a, like fashion bit to them. I don't know.
Yeah.
A little earring.
They look like a little, they're a little loop inside your ear. Yeah. It's, So, you know, but they work really well. They sound good.
And Matt Straub on X points out he uses his AirPods Pro. And Dave, I know you've seen me at the hockey games wearing my AirPods Pro for two reasons. One is the noise reduction, which is great.
Yes.
And then the other is I can actually listen to the radio announcer's call.
Yeah.
About a minute and a half later, you know, what was that penalty for?
Yeah, exactly.
So.
And you're right. The anything that seals your ear off, you know, it like regular AirPods are not going to protect you from outside sound. AirPods Pro, which seal into your ear, as long as you have a good seal, will protect you from outside sound. And I'm being very careful to articulate this that way. It's the same with like what I'm wearing to do the show, which are all Claire in-ear monitors. They will protect me from outside sounds. There is nothing other than, you know, my own will that will protect me from not turning the volume of the speaker up too loud and hurting my hearing, which you can also do with AirPods. You can protect yourself from all the outside sounds you want and still damage your hearing by cranking it up. And I've heard, you know, people in the music industry say, oh, yeah, in-ear monitors are not a form of hearing protection. It's like, that is so technically true and yet so misleading, because when used correctly, they absolutely can help save your hearing.
Sure.
But if you turn them up to the same level that you're used to hearing without them in, maybe that's a bad idea.
It's actually worse, probably.
It's worse. Yeah. And like the folks at Sensaphonics, Michael Santucci, Sensaphonics makes in-ear monitors. Michael Santucci is an audiologist and sort of very well-known and respected in the industry. But they have a device that will measure what you are delivering to yourself via your in-ear monitors so that you know. Yeah. Yeah. It's not cheap. It's like $500, but, you know, yeah. So I don't remember what the name of that device is. Yeah.
Plus the regular AirPods don't have active noise canceling, which is also helpful.
Well, you can't have active noise canceling unless you are sealing your ears off from the outside world.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. So, All right.
All right.
Now it's so evidently, yes, we had 10 more minutes of stuff to talk about.
There it's time to go.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Adam, I'm sorry if we made you late for work today.
No, we're good.
Okay, cool. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Thanks to our sponsors, of course, parallels.com/MGG with code MGG15 for 15% off. Backblaze.com/MGG where you can start your no-risk free trial. LinkedIn.com/MGG where you can post your first job for free. And thanks to you for listening. That's really, like, of all the things that you can do to help us, that is step one. There are more, but that's really step one, and we really appreciate it. So thank you for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week. Adam, you have any advice for everybody?
Yeah. Hey, don't get caught.
Made on a Mac.
Later.